it may be the class of 2050. Who knows? So go ahead and light your sun candles if you haven't. And let me know when you're ready to charge them.
Yeah, Magnus is ready.
Good.
Ready.
Wonderful. Anybody not ready? Okay, cool. Here we go. Put your hands over your candle and child of wonder, child of flame, nourish our spirits and protect our aim. Wonderful. So I'll probably announce this twice, just in case a couple of people were late getting in, but as of next week, there will be two class sections, which means you have a choice. There's, of course, the same class on Sunday as we have now, and there will also be a Monday night class. You can do either or both. So is that, you all understand? You know, so the Monday night class will be, if we're talking about Mountain Time, it'll start at 8 o'clock Mountain Time.
Okay.
So that, of course, is 7 o'clock Pacific. And on across the board as it goes cross country.
Okay.
And we'll obviously cover the same material both Sunday and Monday nights. But because there are 10 of us in class and 11 including me, and you are, by the way, you can always bring a guest to class if you want. Just let us know so we include them. And because there are that number of us, I want to make sure that we have enough time to debrief homework and so forth. So that's why we're dividing into two sections. Is that cool for you guys?
That's great.
And so you don't have to have a home. I mean, it's nice to have a home night. We're hoping to have something like 5 and 5 because that would make it a lot easier. But, you know, if you can't make Sunday 1 week and you can make Monday, then do that, of course.
Yeah, that's terrific to have that choice.
Exactly. And you don't have to let us know ahead of time. However, if you must miss, I always want to know ahead of time, okay? If you can't make either, you know, so that I know that you're okay and that you're just off on the top of the Himalayas or something. Okay. I'm hoping that all of you all read... I should go over a couple other things before I forget. There is Lab, which is for extra work or if you're having trouble with the homework. And also, this is a primary rule for this school. If you ever start looking at your homework and you don't know what to do or you're having trouble, you call me right away or another student. You do not sit and wait, because the best way to be successful as a magician or a shaman is whenever we do a class, you start your homework that night or the next morning, because then you are in gear. This is becoming a way of life. This is not a course you take. This is a way of life. So if you want that as a way of life, I'll be telling you as we go along how to make that so, and that's one of the ways. And the homework is easy stuff, and most of it can be done while you're doing your life. It's not meant to be taken out of your life. It's meant to be in your life. So Lab is for extra work, extra whatever, or if you missed a class and you need you are required to do a makeup anyway, so that's when you do it if possible, and that's always Wednesday night at 6 to 7 p.m. Mountain Time. And you've got that number and everything. It's actually the same number as class and the same PIN number. Now, the way it works is I come on for the first 10 minutes. If nobody comes on, I hang up.
Okay.
So you don't come in at 5:30 and think I'll be there if you happen to be the only person. But there's also what's called appointments, or what do we call this? Office hours. And that's on Tuesdays from, I believe it's 10 o'clock to noon. And that's by appointment. You make an appointment at least 24 hours ahead on the website. That's for personal stuff relative to the course, where you don't, you know, you want more of my time personally, individually. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
How is that mountain time?
I'm sorry?
Is that mountain time, 10 a.m. to noon?
Yeah, 10 a.m. to noon mountain time in half-hour increments. So you schedule your... Do they schedule themselves?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a form on the website for you to schedule yourself. Okay, and I'm hoping that all of you all had a chance to look at the introduction for course material. If not, please do so. It's some really valuable information that is directly from my teachers at Church of Seven Arrows. And it's George Dew's ideas about magic and why we do it, and here's some of his past experience and so forth. So it's really useful in terms of the question and the topic that we'll be talking about tonight anyway, which is why study magic. And the only other thing I want to make sure is, can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. If ever you can't, let me know right away. Okay, and there often are video clips to look at for following classes, and hopefully I will be reminding you of that, such as for this particular class, there was Charging the Sun Candle and Exit Rituals, and then for next class, Building Air Boxes. So... And I'm fairly certain they're all in order, so shouldn't be a problem. Okay. And, of course, some of you all have been working on the website and had a few meetings with me ahead of time, and don't worry if you didn't. But if I say anything thinking you already know it and you don't, such as Charging the Sun Candle and all that, let me know. Okay. What is magic? That's an important place to start, because you notice that world over, that's kind of a buzzword, not as much now, thanks to Harry Potter, but back a few years, if you told someone you were studying magic, they would ask you to do card tricks or look at you like you were to be banned. So there's a lot of hype about what magic is. And when we talk about magic or shamanism in this school, we mean very specific things. So I want you to know what that is, so that should you want to tell someone what you're studying, you know how to inform and teach them what that is, because they will ask you things like, oh, do you do black magic? Or are you a white magician or a black magician? Well, tell you what, magic is not prejudice. There is no such thing as white and black magic. There are people who use magic properly, and there are people who don't. That's about the size of it. So, from our school's point of view, what is magic? It is the science of deliberate creation. It's being able to create, using your intention, reproducibly what you want to create. And the reproducible should be heavily underlined, because, you see, this is not a cookbook recipe type study. This is all by your experience. And so the whole ability to study magic is to take the world at large and create constants out of a sea of variables so that you can do an exercise in such a way that you can not only yourself produce the same result over and over, but you can anybody else that you properly teach and that carries out that exercise properly will get a discernible result or a predictable result. Magic is the science of effective prayer. A lot of prayer does not work for several reasons. One, because it's too generalized and doesn't carry enough force, or it's not properly constructed in terms of specifying exactly what you want and not what you don't want, or it's addressed to the wrong person or being. And for that reason, in some of the higher courses, well, actually the very next course, we study what's called the hierarchy of beings so that you know who to go to for help, who is responsible for what. And there are very few schools that consider that or use that other than romantically. We do it scientifically. Magic is the science of manifesting higher will, God's will, if you wish, on the energetic and material planes. It's the thing about the devil card in the tarot. It's bringing the higher energies into the lower realms, or bringing the lower realms up, or a participant of the lower realms up to the level of the higher realms. The interpenetration, or the as above, so below. Magic is the science of heightened awareness, selective perception, and dynamic, harmonious relationships. Now, why would it be the science of those three things? Because our awareness is one of our primary human tools, and it is probably the least understood tool in most cultures, and therefore the poorly used tool. So part of what we're doing, and the way we do our homework, the way we do, is to begin to not only train our awareness to be our own personal tool that really functions for our own personal aims, but also to be able to broaden the scope of our perceptic ability so that we can see. A number of you, when we interviewed, said you were really interested in shamanism, and that's great, and so am I. And from a scientific or a researcher's point of view, there is very little value in studying shamanism if you're not able to perceive that world. So we have to learn how to see more, perceive more. And dynamic, harmonious relationships. For one, if we don't know how to communicate clearly, it's very difficult to have dynamic, harmonious relationships. We're not just talking about intimate one-on-one, you know. There's all kinds of dynamic, harmonious relationships on the human and beyond scales. And we have to understand how to do that. And that's part of the study of magic. And it is the study of intention. And if you want a real good look at what that is all about, I refer you to your library and look at a copy of Aleister Crowley's Magic in Theory and Practice at the introduction only, which is a set of a number of postulates about magic, which, as you'll notice, is all about really just simply the use of one's intention. Magic is a system of creation, not coercion. People who are misinformed that think that magic is a way of coercing or forcing or controlling, it is a system that learns to effectively create by controlling our inner world, which replicates outward or expresses into the outer world. It is often said it is a system of manipulation by some who don't understand, and I would agree it is, because the actual definition of manipulation is skillful use of the hands. And we do that. Questions or comments? Anyone?
Right now.
Nope. Sounds good.
Okay. Just making sure everybody's with me and, you know, every intentional act is a magical act. So people are doing magic all the time, although not very often consciously. We're learning to do it consciously.
I did have a quick question.
Yes.
When you refer to Aleister Crowley's book, is that in the website library, or is it a book that we need to...
Oh, I meant the public library.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a fairly well-known one of his books, and it's not one of those big compendiums.
Right, I recognize the book, but I just wasn't sure what you meant by that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a wonderful introduction I ran across many years ago, and I was delighted because I was sort of told, as a lot of us probably were, that Aleister Crowley was weird and all those kind of things. And once I read his introduction to magic and theory and practice, I knew he was right along just the way we are.
Thank you.
Yeah. And magic is the traditional path of spiritual growth. So, now what does that mean? And also the second one that says magic is necessary to effective religious practice. Well, what that means is just this. In today's world, many of the major religions of the world and the advocates thereof and the leaders thereof are not magically trained. In fact, very few probably are. And because of that, and they're not shamanically trained, which magic is the precursor for shamanism in all schools that I know of, all the ancient schools, but without the tools of divination and the tools of knowing how the four elements work and interrelate, you do not have the proper tools to create ritual that is live and meets the needs of the people, because you, first of all, don't know the component parts or how to put them together, how to cut and fit, as we say. And second of all, you don't know how to test that which you do, which as a magician, we don't do that. We don't go create something and then just send it out into the world or descend it upon a bunch of people without testing it by divination to know what it's going to do. That would be irresponsible. So what we have is a priest caste system, mostly worldwide, and the priests are not trained how to create rituals, just how to run the rituals. And for that reason, you notice that a lot of the religious rituals that are done are piecemeal anymore. They don't have all the actual components of ritual in them, therefore they don't create. And you will learn all the components and how to do it. So, everything that we do is guided by rules of the road. And some of us have already talked some about that, and I'm just going to mention a little more and then ask if there are any questions about that. Because rules of the road are the ethics of magical practice. It's different from morals and ethics in the world level, because those change from place to place and time, whereas the rules of the road, which are really the operating laws of the universe, never change. They operate on all levels, perceptibly different, but actually the same. And that's sort of a conundrum I've just laid on you, but it'll make sense as we go on. Because you see, your knowledge and your understanding are based upon your experience, and therefore something may look like a miracle at one level that is understandable on another level by certain laws and so forth. So, but the rules of the road apply to us and on us whether we know them or not. So it's good to know them, and this school does never advocates breaking of rules of the road because, for one, it doesn't make sense. Because you always bring feedback from the universe, from other sources, including inside yourself, as well as outside yourself, upon us. And so once we know, we just don't do that because it's a waste of time and energy and everything. So two major rules. Whatever is done to the environment or to other beings in the environment brings similar effects upon the doer. That's simply the law of similars, which is how homeopathy and a lot of forms of healing work, herbology and so forth. It's so that you can identify that which is how I am inside reflects on the outside. It's called the law of being. Now, it is true, and you will hear people say, that karma is like, that I am living out my karma. From what I understand, there is no such thing. If you think you're living out your karma, that's your karma. You created that. What I mean by that is that we live in a pay-as-you-go universe, not a credit-debit universe. So you don't get seven strokes against you that in the next 10 lifetimes you have to clean up unless you aren't paying attention. Because whenever you practice forgiveness and amending one's behaviors and one's thoughts and beliefs and so forth, you are free. When you forgive yourself, basically you're free. And then intent, the number two one, that the magician or the shaman judges the goodness or badness of our acts, conscious or unconscious acts, on what is reflected back to us from the universe. It's sort of this, the front and the back of the same thing, because the law of being states that the level of my being creates the level of my the events which I attract to me. The level of my life matches the level of my being. Now that's not punishment. That is convenience. That's how we know where we are. We can always tell. If you're not sure about how you're doing inside, look at kind of the situations and factors of your life outside. This is not about blaming. It's not about blaming ourselves because we aren't doing better than we are. That doesn't help. That brings more of the same. It's about understanding that at certain levels of energies of thought and feeling, I attract certain, the tone of that in terms of similar events. Does not mean it's a one-on-one match. But I can tell if I look and pay attention and study. So I can either study my inside or I can study my outside. I can study the world and understand these laws, or I can study inside myself, which leads us to the two approaches to the study of spirituality or magic, called the hermetic or the mystical. I didn't go through the other rules of the road, but if anybody wants me to in comment, I will. Does anyone need that, or were they reasonably clear to you all in reading them?
They were clear.
Yes. Was there anyone who hasn't read them as yet? Because I didn't know if Randy, if you had had a chance, or...
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Okay, but if there are ever any questions, just ask about them. Some of them are not exactly clear in the way they're stated sometimes, but I think in the way Stephanie has rewritten, they are very clear. When it says, don't set a price for the use of magic, it does not mean that you can't charge for the use of magic or doing magic. It means that don't consider yourself outlandish because nobody else knows what you do and charge $600 an hour. That would not work very well. Okay, so as above, so below. Simply put, that the operating laws of the universe operate the same on all levels. Okay. Now, there have been, in all cultures, sort of two ways to study spirituality or magic. The hermetic, which is sort of the Western world's analytical approach, and the mystic, which is also called the Oriental approach. And these are important. If any of you all have ever read any of Emmett Fox, he often talks about the Oriental way of seeing things. It's a different way. If any of you all ever study Chinese medicine, it is generally taught in the better schools. It's taught in the Oriental way, not in the Western way, which is generally very befuddling to a Westerner. When I was in school, there were a number of doctors and nurses and professional people in our classes, and they had a terrible time because their Western thinking didn't help a whole bunch. So what is the difference? Well, the analytical approach to things, it's not that they both lead to the same place. So don't worry about that. And we do it both ways in the school, so that you, it doesn't matter, you'll get it. But the analytical always wants to take things apart, to separate things out, and look at the component parts and then try to sort of deduce the whole. Now, the major problem with that is it always is demanding proof. And a lot of things, because proof is simply a mental consideration, a lot of things can't be proven, only except by one's experience. But alchemy and that whole approach, the whole Golden Dawn approach, was primarily the Western or Hermetic approach. And the mystical or the Eastern approach, or the we call it the Oriental approach, looks at the whole first. It experiences the whole first, like in the I Ching. And then it read it, it sort of defines the individual specific of that from there. It separates it out. If any of you have studied the I Ching, if you look at the way it is expressed, it's sort of always in some kind of universal form. Crossing the waters is, I can't remember the word they use, not acceptable, but it furthers. It furthers to cross the great waters. Well, okay, so that is a sort of a big statement, and it could be first defined in the I Ching as, if you want to be effective as a country, it's good to have commerce with other countries, and that's why you cross the great waters. And then it'll redefine that on the individual level by saying, if you want to be effective as a person, you need to have compassion or appreciation for everybody's point of view. Same thing. That's also crossing the great waters. Or the dividing waters, if you want to say that. Chinese medicine sees everything. It doesn't talk about disease as labels the way it is done in the West with Latin terms and so forth. Only in modern time to be acceptable to the Western world, but in all the original texts and original ways of teaching, it simply saw everything like the weather. Internal weather equals external weather. The same laws, same rules. You have excess internal wind. If you're fighting too much, you have buttock winds. That sort of thing. So, it is perhaps a little easier with that approach because you do not bring in the question of doubt into the formula. The Western approach often, the Western scientific model, tends to put doubt into the equation, which is not useful from a magical point of view. And that's why we don't let our magic be tested, one of the rules of the road. Because that same, the tester's doubt, or skepticism, because the Western science model says nothing is so until it's proven to be so. Therefore, skepticism is acceptable. But to be a good magician, skepticism simply gets in the way between you and your experiment, the Heisenberg principle. Questions or comments? From anybody at this point.
No.
Is this all making sense to you guys?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was beautifully written.
Oh, well, thank you for that saying that. Yes. Paula and Stephanie worked hard on this, as it did a number of other folks, so. So. Further on the question of why study magic, what is the point of studying magic? It's part of, let me see if I can find it in the notes, because I'm jumping around a little bit. Tiddlypum. Oh, it's on page 7, course premise. Okay, see, the premise that we're working with, this entire course is under a particular premise. Now, the way we study is that we say everything we present is a hypothesis, except for rules of the road. Everything we present to you is a hypothesis, a theory. And you prove it to be so or no by your experience. Therefore, you are a researcher. Okay. The premise is, if the four elements, air, fire, water, and earth, be understood in terms of their characteristics and correspondences, which we're going to look at next, what are those, and how do they work, along with their interactions, in other words, how they interact one element to another, their behaviors, if you will, a person can understand anything he or she wishes in or about this universe.
And Alan, I think I have a question. It's Helen. When it's a hypothesis, and we're going to verify it through our experience,
yeah,
isn't that that feels like, I see the difference, but it also...
Okay, it's testing with a totally neutral...
Okay.
Because one of the requirements to study magic is to suspend judgment.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's good.
That's hard for Westerners, believe me.
Yeah, because I mean, when I hear hypothesis, I think of the scientific method, and that's proving something to me, or, you know what I mean?
By your experience.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So, great question, Helen. That's a really good clarifier. You see, because, you see, what we call proof means that you can supposedly prove something to another person, not demanding that they experience it.
Right.
So, see, that's just in mind.
Yeah.
But that's not where knowledge is.
Right, I get that. Alan, it's Michelin.
Yes.
Could I comment on that?
Oh, sure.
Could we say that that is... If there's no attachment to our outcome?
Yeah.
Is that summing it up?
Yeah.
Or am I...
Exactly so. In fact, we even go further. We often remind ourselves in this course that altered procedures produce altered results. And it's not only that there's no attachment to the outcome, as you put it very nicely. There is the further... extension of that is that how a magician evaluates the effectiveness of their operation is by the result they get. So if you're already pre-attached, so to speak, to a result, you are already affecting your result, and that gets in your way. Does that make sense to you guys? So we do it with a generous heart. You know, I'm going to get a result, and I'll be happy with that because it'll always tell me something. Okay. So, now that premise may seem to be a huge one, but that is literal. And in fact, in just 10 weeks, you all, every one of you, will know how to change your or anybody else's elemental balances. And because of that, you know, you will actually be able to not only change how a person thinks and feels, but how they behave as well. Because all of those things come out of our elemental balances. That's the encoding, you could say, or the outpicturing of the DNA. And when you change your elemental balances, what do you think happens to the DNA, anybody?
It changes.
It changes. That is correct. So this is a primary tool to change the DNA. Okay. So then, we've made this wonderful statement. Now, how do we back it up? What is a characteristic and what is a correspondence? We need to know that, because that's how we're going to study. And just right from the very first, please understand that when we talk about air, fire, water, and earth, we are not just talking about air, meaning what you breathe in and out. That's only the tiniest part of air. But how do you find air then? How do you know what it is? By virtue of its characteristic. So what is a characteristic? This is on also on page 7. An inherent attribute or aspect or quality of something. A description of something or a descriptor. Yes.
Oh, this Magnus.
Yes.
Just at page 7, I'm trying to, I want to know, is it on the e-book, you know, the one that comes with the disc?
Oh, but the notes I'm talking about?
Yes. You said page 7.
Yeah, that's in what you download, what you print out from the disc.
That is on the introduction part of...
No, we're actually in class 1.
Okay. Kind of confused me a little bit because, excuse me, I was trying to go through the introduction when we finished, you know, when we are doing with, dealing with the road rules, rule of the road.
Which was also in the introduction. It's in two places, Magnus. Sorry about that.
Got it now. Thank you.
Do you know where we are now?
Yes.
Good for you. Didn't mean to confuse you guys. Okay.
I'm sorry. Sometimes you mention about, you know, the next class we'll be taking will be A, and which was the next book. So I kind of relaxed thinking, you know, I can find whatever we are discussing.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, we're going to talk some about air right in just a minute.
Okay.
So if you can't find where I am, just let me know, okay?
I found it.
Okay. So a characteristic of an element is like the way the element behaves, okay? So if I say a characteristic of air is easy flow. Do you notice how any air movement in the environment is just anywhere and everywhere? Wind, for instance. That's easy flow. That's a characteristic. Whereas water is called smooth flow because water does not flow, even if it's emotions as water, as easily as air, because it has more form, weight, and consistency. So those are characteristics, and that's how we locate and define and understand the elements, by their characteristics. Every element has them. Air has about 14 of them. And so when you're looking for air, you look for the characteristic of air. You do not look for air. You will never magically find air. You will find the characteristic of air. You will also find the correspondence of air. So what is a correspondence? Something that symbolizes or relates to an element or something, but it's not a part of. The easiest example of that is your name. Your name, Magnus, your name, Micheline, your name, Tom, Dan. These relate to you, and interestingly enough, they also access you. But you can't find your name on you. It's not a part of you. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little confused, Alan, about that. What you mean by accessing?
Well, if who was that, Dan?
Randy.
Randy, I'm sorry. Randy, if I say Randy, does that not access you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it means. Okay.
Yeah, it does, but this is a huge thing, Randy, and I'm so glad you asked that. You see, everywhere in the world, because of Carl Jung and other people, people have gotten the idea that symbols represent something, but actually a symbol accesses something. Do you see the difference? If you're dealing with a dead symbol, it represents something. If you're dealing with a live symbol, it accesses something. the tarot cards are live symbols. When you do a tarot reading, you've got a panographic model of the universe right in front of you. It is accessing those energies and parts of the universe. Does that make sense? Otherwise, tarot spells would not work. And there are many, you know, you all familiar with the Navajo sand paintings?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And also the Tibetan sand paintings?
Yeah.
Do you all know what they are? Anybody know what they are?
No.
They are spell matrix accesses. And they're also archetype accesses, sometimes chaotic, sometimes huge energy beings or energy forms that don't belong on this planet at all. They're, some of them are very dangerous. Why do you think they eradicate them after they do them? They are ritual accesses. Okay, so the primary law of a magician is that wherever the characteristic of an element is, or the correspondent of an element is, the element is. That's a powerful statement because that means that we can access, we can directly get the energy of an element wherever easy flow, stable, clear, carrier, anywhere where we see those characteristics happening, the element is available. That's called an energy matrix. And we will learn to pull energy from that. And, of course, the colors. The colors of an element are its correspondence, not its characteristics. They relate to, but they access it. So those are our primary tools, the correspondence of the element and the characteristic. And the more that you understand those, the easier it is to use them. Because you're understanding, you see, everything in this universe other than, say, the guys that are made up purely of the element, elementals, is made up of four elements, everything. There's nothing that does not have an element in it in some way, shape, or form, because we live in a four-element universe, except for the elementals, and we'll talk about those in each element. So,
may I make one comment on that?
Sure.
I don't know if it relates at all, but I think it's kind of interesting that even the recent findings of human DNA or DNA seem to indicate that it exists in made up of four elements.
Oh, really? I hadn't heard that.
Well, actually, not so much in elements, but certain types of, I would imagine, proteins. But there are only four kinds.
And they probably break out. Well, you'll be able to tell as we go through the elements. Let us know if that correlates, okay?
I will.
Cool.
It's an interesting thing.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. So now we're going to individually look at the air element. So, and when you see in your notes where in when things are in small type, that was the original posters we used in classes. That's what that's all about. So, air is any gas or vapor. Now, that's physical air. It does not mean that's all that air is, because thoughts are air, too. And mind is air, and planning is air, and talking is air, and so forth. But on the physical side of things, any gas or vapor is air. Now, these are the correspondences. The direction for air is east. Because in any creation sequence, you always have to start with an idea or a plan or something that you want, a dream, whatever. All experience begins in air, and air is east, in this realm where the sun rises. The tool is the wand, same as the staff in the tarot. We call those wands, because a staff is a shepherd's staff. That's a different tool. The elemental spirit is the sylph. Now, interestingly enough, when we talk about elementals, anybody know who had actually discovered the elementals first and wrote about them at great length?
No.
You're going to be shocked. And any biblical students with us?
Yes, I am myself.
Yeah, and do you know who wrote first about elementals?
No, I don't.
King Solomon.
Uh-huh.
His other name was Solomon the Mage. Mage is a word that means magician. So how about that about that guy?
Right, right.
And he did a... Oh, I read the scriptures. He did a lot of mystical things or spiritual things, but I never thought of him, you know, of having written about the fourth elemental, or I've not read it.
It's not popularly known, is it? But it is so. In fact, Paracelsus came after him. It was a Greek chap who actually defined the terms that we use, but King Solomon was the first one to actually write about all these elementals. But he named each one individually. And Paracelsus said, okay, all the air elementals are sylphs, and so forth. So those are beings whose bodies are made entirely of air, and they live around us all the time, and they're very useful to get to know. Whenever you see cigarette smoke in a still room, curling, curling, curling up as it goes, that's a sylph playing in the smoke. They're twisty in shape. They love moving in that shape. They're good communicators when you learn how to talk to them. They're very quick, and they like to get in very light things like tinsel on a Christmas tree and move it around. They're useful because they can give you information on weather and all kinds of things when you learn how to communicate with them, particularly if you're traveling or camping, and they can sort of fill you in. They love to gossip, just like magpies. The part of a person that air is the mind or mental processes, thought, knowledge, and all the knowledge pieces that we own. Those are all air. The direction of view is outward or extroverted. Air people like Gemini tend to be very extroverted. Of course, Gemini, Libra, Aquarius are all air signs. And Gemini is the most air expressive, being mutable air. Are you all hearing some static? Did it clear up?
Yeah.
Good.
I'm sorry, I think I
crossed
it.
Okay.
That was air, right?
Yes, that was air. Very good, Magnus. You're practicing on us already. Oh no!
Max is the Gemini.
My battery was running out, so I tried to replace it with despair, and it just messed up the whole thing.
Oh well.
I was thinking of calling and using cell phone. That way I can charge and be online. But I wasn't.
That's okay. That's cool. Thanks for letting us know.
I'm sorry.
No worries. Okay, so your colors for air. Physical or mundane level air is clear, just like glass, which corresponds primarily to seeing visually or breathing, and a bunch of other things that we'll go into more later on. But that's the primary thing it corresponds to. Then white, the color white, is mental level of air, and that's thinking or speaking, primarily. A lot of other things like planning, communicating, memorizing, and so forth. We'll get to all of that. And then the spiritual level of air is just like the color of the sky, sky blue. Some like to call it pastel blue or powder blue. And that relates to your understanding or enlightenment. Now remember, again, that color is an energy matrix. And wherever the color is, the energy of that element is there and available to us. Now, as we go through, you'll see that not all the colors that we experience are represented in each element. Like, air is just three colors, clear, white, powder blue. Water is water blue, and deep blue, and so forth. You all have color chips. You've probably looked at them. Fire has five colors. Earth has two colors, three, including black. And then you say, well, what about purple? What about magenta? What about puce? And so forth and so on. Well, obviously, all the other colors are blends of the elements. So because this is basic magic, we're going to learn to use the basic primary colors, not primary in the true color sense, but primary in terms of the elements, even though, yes, all of the three primary colors will be covered. But and then later on, you can learn to use blends and mixes. But to be clear, because we want to create constants so we can produce foreseeable results, we stay with those specific colors. That's why we gave you color chips, so you know what color to use. Okay, now, let's look at the characteristics.
Helen, I've got one question about elemental spirits.
Yeah.
Helen, in the writing, it said winds are actional beings and the old ones are the wisdom of the direction. I don't know what did you mean by old ones?
Okay. Have you ever heard of the medicine wheel?
Uh-huh.
And it's talking about four directions, right?
Right.
And there are beings which sort of live or are in charge of those four directions.
Okay.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
Those are called the old ones.
All right.
Okay?
Okay.
And actually, those are a collection of beings in each direction of former humans from way, way back in time who are very capable and are sort of the keepers of the planet, in a sense. They are directly under Grandmother. Does that make sense?
Okay.
And the winds, which we will work with not too far down the road even, of the energies of the direction. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. But you're going to learn to be intimate with both of those guys.
Good.
Yeah. Okay, so let's take a look at the characteristics of air and how you do this, how you're going to learn to do your homework each week is make yourself a list of the characteristics that you can carry around on a 3x5 card or whatever so that you become so familiar with those that you can just rattle them off. Because that's your key to finding the element in people, in objects, and so forth. And what we call recognition exercises, they're very simple, child stuff, but they're very powerful. Because the more that you do them, the more that you will instantly recognize that element in anything or anyone and how it acts in them. Which we need to know to be able to know how to change their balances. Because not just like baking a cake, we're going to add some air and add some fire and add some water and add some earth. You do it characteristic by characteristic. It's the only way you can do it. And color by color. Color plus characteristic. Color plus characteristic. Plus or minus. Give it to them or take it away from them. An energy box at a time. Cool stuff. Okay, so clarity or transparency. Now, as we talk about these, see it not just on the physical level, but on the mental and spiritual levels too. Because if I say something is transparent, and yes, you say glass is transparent and air is transparent, but people are transparent. We can see into them. We can see their motivations. We can see the beliefs that their behaviors relate to and come from. That's also transparency. It's also clarity. The inherent use of something makes it clear too. If I look at a chair and I understand the chairness of that chair, that has clarity. Because you see, if you saw a chair that was so, say, for a different kind of being than our bodies are, you might not know it was a chair. That would not have clarity for your uses anyway. People can express themselves in clarity. Books may express themselves in clarity, but there are other books that don't, and people that don't. So you can or may not have clarity. Air is a carrier, primarily of fire energy. You will never find air that does not have fire in it, at least very rarely. It would have to be awfully still or dead. One example, and it wouldn't always be an example, would be the air inside of a thermopane window. But if you heat it up by putting sun energy towards it or heat energy from inside of a living space, it then has fire energy in it. And air will carry anything lightweight, like thoughts, ideas, sounds, dust, particles, germs, viruses. And of course, the faster and the more fire you put into the air, the more it will carry, like tornadoes and so forth. And, of course, mental air, ideas, can carry also fire energy, enthusiasm, and so forth. air is reflective. And again, reflective on the reflecting on something, thinking about something, meditating about something, that's an example of reflective. It does not just have to be glare or a mirror, but those are reflective too. And air reflection tends to be perfect mirror or silvery of nature. Air is both compressible and expandable. You can compress your thoughts. You write a speech, you can compress it or you can expand it. You can compress physical air or expand it, often by heating it or cooling it, for that matter. Your understanding can be compressed or expanded. What do we say? A narrow-minded person? Close-minded. Is their understanding is more compressed. What would be the opposite? A wide-minded? No. Open-minded.
Broad-minded.
There you go. Someone who looks at broads a lot. No. Sorry about that. Got carried away. That was an example of expanded air, you see.
How about somebody that's full of hot air?
Yes, exactly. That's a good example of expanded air. Yeah, you bet. You bet. And someone who doesn't communicate well at all, could that not be an example of compressed air?
Uh-huh.
Someone who's, what, taciturn? Or secretive? Does anybody know what the two most secretive signs of the zodiac are?
Scorpio?
That's one of them. That's the obvious one. What's the inobvious one?
Cancer?
No, Libra.
Libra.
Really? Yeah, I lived with a Libra lady. Boy, was she secretive, but you never knew it.
Libra.
Yeah.
Wow.
They like to keep you guessing, but keep you guessing that you're guessing. But delightfully, generally. See, Scorpio likes to play with people, and Libra just does it because that's the way Libras do it. Easy flow. We talked about that. Air moves easily, quickly, jerkily, everywhere. See, your attention is air, and it flows easily, hard to stabilize. Gets attracted here, there, hither, and on. Air is reactive. Acted easily upon by fire. That's why it's so easy flow, of course. Or if you become excited, your attention is unstable. That's another form of reactive. Shape malleable. Now, there's several of these characteristics that initially sometimes give people trouble. Shape malleable is one. All that means is to change the shape. If I ball up a piece of paper, crumple it up, that changes its shape. It does not change its weight, density, or mass. If I fold my skin up, or it wrinkles on me when I go in the water and stay in too long, that is shape malleable. I may have absorbed a little extra water and I may have edema. That's not shape malleable. That's expandable. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So shape malleable is not expanded or contracted. It just is changed in its shape. when our bodies bend or stretch and so forth, or curl up in a ball, that is shape malleable. Mutable, on the other hand, is a complete change of element. Now that changes, that's no longer, once something mutates, it's no longer the same element. Air can change into the other elements, into water or earth, under certain conditions. We say, if water evaporates, then it becomes air. By the same token, air can precipitate into water. Ideas and thoughts can become emotional, can precipitate or transform or mutate into feelings. It is often said that most feelings are triggered by thoughts. That's kind of what that means. That is air changing into water. On the other hand, air is also an insulator, particularly if you hold it still. Thoughts can be used to insulate us. That's a primary self-defense technique. One of the best, if you learn this one, you can defend yourself against a lot of attack from the outside world, simply by holding a thought. For instance, someone is trying to convince you of something. They are sort of barraging you with their point of view. You don't have to be rude. Just hold a thought, any thought. Think of a large polka dot elephant. And just think about a large polka dot elephant. You will not get angry. You will not get frightened. You will not get anything. Why? Because you have insulated yourself with a thought. And their thought-fire combinations cannot affect you or move you off your anchor point. That's an anchor point, so to speak. It's an anchor. It's not an anchor point, but it is a form of anchor that you can anchor yourself with a thought. Mantras, what are they? They are air insulators. They stabilize because the awareness is so reactive that we're given mantras so that we have some way of stabilizing our attention. Air is also inherently stable. Now, isn't that wild? It's reactive on the one hand and inherently stable on the other hand. It's both. Because it requires fire energy to move it. In of itself, it will sit there very obligingly. You can have lots of thoughts and without fire energy, i.e. will or desire or action or power or force, some kind of movement, you may never do anything. You could be a nice, comfortable couch potato with lots of thoughts. This is another one that sometimes is hard for people to understand. Air is a direct mediator for fire. Now, what does that mean? What does a mediator do? It gets between something and something and makes it work better, makes it non-destructive, makes it constructive. So air allows fire to burn usefully rather than destructively. In any level, you obviously with physical fire, you need air for it to burn or it will go out. But in mental or spiritual air-fire combinations. Fire, because fire energy is also anger, or fire can get out of control, either as anger or just too much energy, aggression, violence, whatever. That air, as ideas, communication, principles, limit how fire burns, or how fire acts, if you want to say that. So whenever you have fiery people that aren't communicating, well, get them to communicating, i.e. increase their air energy, and they can create useful rather than destructive activities. And as Aleister Crowley said, many people know this statement he made, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. But not many people know the rest of it, which was will under intellect, which means that your will, your fire energy, must follow principle and the operating laws of the universe, air energy, be guided by.
Alan?
Yes?
Micheline, I have just a quick question. Your comment about increasing air energy. Are we going to be looking at that later on? Am I jumping ahead?
You mean how to do it?
Yeah.
We will be doing that next week.
Okay.
You know, I want you all to start practicing recognizing the air energy, air by virtue of the characteristics, before I have you throwing air boxes at one another or yourselves and so forth.
Okay.
But I do want you all to look at the video clip for next week that is how to do air boxes. So even this week you'll know how, and some of you being adventurous will probably explore it anyway. And I can't stop you, but but don't be discontent. Very quickly, you will be doing just that, okay? So, air is lightweight compared to water and earth. You can't compare it to fire because fire has no weight, but air is lightweight. Thoughts are almost weightless, but not entirely. Thoughts actually exist, you know. There are things called thought forms, as written about greatly by Annie Besant and C.W. Ledbetter, members of the Golden Dawn group. Air is masculine in terms of the way it behaves. When we talk about masculine and feminine in terms of the elements, we are not talking about it in terms of maleness and femaleness. We're talking about it in terms of how the energies move and behave. And you can. I mean, we will do masculine, white, and clear boxes, and you will feel what that feels like. So, see, as we said, a lot of this doesn't actually make total sense. But air, because of its inherent movement, if you look at all the different characteristics, it is very outward and outgoing, outmoving, extrovert. Remember, air is extroverted, outward. And that is a masculine inherent tendency in terms of polarity. Okay, so those are the air characteristics. And remember that if any one even characteristic of air is present, the element air is present in anything. So, a little sort of test in that regard. Say, take the hair on a person's head. Kimberly, what is an air characteristic you would see there?
Well, someone's head?
Hair on someone's head?
But you can see it. Where? I don't understand.
Okay, you've got a list of characteristics, right?
Yeah.
Okay, look at the list. Look at your hair or anybody else's and find any one characteristic that you can find there.
Okay.
You can't find any of them?
Okay.
Well, let me ask you a question. Is your hair a carrier?
Yeah.
Of what?
I'm sorry, I still don't understand.
Does your hair, anybody's hair, carry anything at all? Ever?
It carries dandruff,
though. Okay, that would be a carrier, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so that, then, you could say there's air energy there. Do you understand?
Okay.
Just that simple. This is not complicated. Don't make it complicated. Helen, what's another characteristic?
Well, if I just washed it, it's reflective.
Okay. Well, it, a lot of hair is reflective of light and colors and so forth, you know, whether it's washed or not, right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay. But is it reflective of anything else?
Other than light or color? Well, it would be reflective of age, perhaps, if it, well.
Okay, yes, it would.
Yeah.
About health.
Health.
Okay, how about my cleanliness or lack of it?
Right.
How about my attitudes about myself and the world?
Uh-huh.
See how many reflectives there are?
Yeah.
They're all air reflective, every one of them. Randy, what's another?
Reactive.
Absolutely. You can perm it, it blows in the wind, it mats down, yeah. You can find lots of reactive, right?
Mm-hmm.
How about your hair standing on end? When you were scared?
Yeah.
That's reactive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool.
Insulator too, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
Would it be an insulator as well?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
You betcha. Tom, can you find another?
Yes, I can actually find two. In fact, air is hidden inward hair, which is kind of interesting, but it is lightweight.
Okay, it's lightweight. Now, what was the first thing you said, that air is what?
The word hair is actually
hidden. I've never heard anybody say that. That is so cool. You are going to be a magician of puns, okay? That's very good. Yeah, hair is definitely lightweight.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Sharon, what's another?
It's shape malleable.
Yes, right on. You can shape it all over the place. Absolutely.
Accessible and expandable, too.
Yeah? Dan, what's another?
Hopefully, it's inherently stable.
Yeah, I want that. Yeah. Unless he's going to be Yul Brynner or one of his lookalikes. Right on. Magnus, what's another?
Easy flow.
Easy flow? Yeah. Yeah, it blows in the wind.
Yes.
Micheline, what's another?
Insulator?
Yes, it sure does. And in what ways does it insulate?
Well, particularly in very, very cold weather, it can shield.
Right. But not in hot weather?
In hot weather, you get the moisture.
Well, and also, you know, like, for instance, most of your doggies cool themselves by their hair. Right?
Sorry, Alan, there was some beeping. I didn't hear.
Doggies.
Okay.
You know, like your real hairy breeds, like your
Alaskan Huskies and all, and they do pretty okay in hot climates because of that hair. Because it does insulate them. You know? And doesn't your hair also insulate you from blows and things like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've also seen icicles form on the hair.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But, so that would insulate, if it insulates you from your body heat from the weather outside, then it can do that. Cool. So this is how you do this.
So Alan, if we saw someone big on styling their hair, these once a week beauty shop women or something.
Right.
Would you say there's a lot of air in them?
Well, they would, at least that one, what you're saying is that they have air in terms of, what would you call that, shape malleable? They would at least have that, right?
Oh, okay.
Because they're changing the shape of their hair. But that behavior in of itself does not necessarily qualify except transparency. Would that be transparent? Does that make sense, Jennifer? And sorry, I didn't know you were here because you're... Is Marilyn with us, too? Okay, so Marilyn isn't, but Jennifer is. Do you see what I mean about it would be transparent because it would tell you something about their behavior? So that would be air transparency. And so if they had a lot of different characteristics, this is really a good question. Because now we're talking about a person's behavior more than just their hair, right? Because they're going to a beauty parlor as a behavior, right? You with me on that?
Yeah.
Okay. So how would we do this? If you look at a person and you want to analyze their behavior in terms of air, you look for air characteristics. How about a person that waves their arms in the air a lot when they talk? What would that be? Anybody?
Fire?
Come on. Air characteristics. Stop looking for elements. Look for characteristics.
Oh.
React.
Reactive.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What else would it be?
Easy flow.
Easy flow.
Reflective.
Yes, right on. This is how you do this. Do you see how this is working?
Uh-huh.
Okay. If you're a person that talks incessantly, and you can't ever shut them up, what characteristics?
Reactive.
Easy flow. Reactive. There's more, which keep going.
Transparency or clarity.
Okay. Insulator, yes. They're aren't they insulating themselves from the world by that?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They're protecting their self-esteem or who knows what. Okay. But they're also expandable, aren't they?
Right.
And they're shade malleable, too, in a sense, because they're all over the map.
Right. Could that be masculine also?
Yes. Absolutely.
Would it be a carrier?
Yes.
How about the inherently stable?
Maybe not. That would be tough to see, but maybe it's so. In other words, if they always did that, then you could say, yeah, they're both reactive and stable, right? Because they're predictable. See, that's what you all have to do. You all have to find all the other words that match this. Because predictable, isn't that stable?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's how we are expanding our perceptics now, our perception of the world. We're seeing it in magical terms. So this... Is that person being shape malleable?
Yeah, they're trying to mask something, so they're changing...
Yeah, they're changing the shape of their ideas all the time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's cool. You guys, this is how you do this. Don't look for the element. Look for the characteristic. You got it? That's the rule. Look for the characteristic, not for the element. You'll confuse yourself. You start looking for the element. Okay. Now, there are a bunch of error characteristic questions. Those are to help you understand this process that I was just doing with you, so that your researches will be pure. And we want to use error when we debrief our homeworks too, because you want to be very succinct. You want to say exactly what you saw, and that's all. What you experienced, and that's all. In our courses, and when we get together, we don't bother with, I didn't do my homework because. I am not interested, you aren't interested, nobody else is. You either did it or you didn't. This is the result you got, or I pass. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we don't, and if you didn't understand something, you don't sit there and go through some explanation, I didn't understand, help me. That's all you need. That's clarity. And that's how we get clarity. Okay. So, what are we doing for homework? Oh, I do need to talk about the Navajo Beauty Way, the exit ritual, for some of you. Has anyone not had a chance to work with the exit ritual at all? I think Helen and Randy, right?
Right, but yeah, I've been pretty pitiful at it, but I've been doing it.
Oh, you have been? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, don't be pitiful at it, okay? Again, that's an explanation.
Okay.
You know, you don't know. See, here's what, let me tell you guys, I'm not being tough. The reason I don't have you explain what you did is you don't know enough. Your explanations are always incorrect. But you believe them.
Yeah.
And that was so valuable, what you just shared.
Okay.
Because you gave me such a great example, I couldn't think of one quick enough. You gave it to me, so I thank you for that, okay?
Okay.
Because, see, at the level that you are, I don't expect you to get it. Do you see?
Yeah.
This is a study of your awareness. It is more important at this point that you see where your awareness has been, typically, than if you were perfect at it. If you were perfect at it, I'd be suspicious. Do you get my point?
Yeah.
I want you to see where you are, and in a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 10 weeks, where did you get to? That's important.
Uh-huh.
I'm not good at it is not important.
Okay.
Because you don't know whether you're good at it or not.
Right.
So we have the verse to charge the sun candle. What is the exit ritual? I don't see it.
Okay. It's the very first simple one. It's on, let's see. Generally, we put that at the very end, but I'm not sure. I have to look myself. Actually, I don't even see it at the very end, but I'm going to give it to you. Don't worry about it. It's the one we've all been working on, but I'm going to ask you something else about it. It's just sky above and earth below, I greet you. Just that simple. We're not qualifying it yet. But, since you've all practiced this now, some, I'm just going to ask you, if you go out and you greet someone, there is generally a response. So what I'm going to ask you to do this week, since you all are very advanced beings anyway, is as you do this, and do it as often as you remember to, and it's always a good idea if you forget to go out and do it. You're in your car, stop your car and get out and do it. Because once being willing to do that, even though you think you're in a hurry, you won't forget again. Or put up sticky notes, do whatever you need to do.
Calendar exit ritual, by the way, is on page 15.
Thank you. Yes, it is. I just didn't know if the Generally, we tell you which form we're doing. But you're right, it is there, an explanation of it. But what I want you to do, after you've said sky above, extending your perceptrix and say sky above, and then holding that contact and earth below, I greet you. I want you to tune into how you feel. Because sometimes, you know, you're in a hurry, or you're feeling down, or you're feeling excited, or you're feeling whatever. See if that changes. Because when it changes, something has happened. That is a magical act. You have received something from somewhere more than what you had before, and I want you to notice that. So, there's just three.
Alan?
Yeah.
Am I understanding correctly, this is Dan, that you extend your focus upwards and downwards, and then after you've done that, you put your focus inwards?
No. Oh, okay, yes. Yes, and okay, let me just clarify that. And that's a nice question, really nice. You extend your focus upwards and you hold that contact. You extend it downwards and you hold that contact. So I've now got sort of two, I've got what you would call double awareness, right?
Okay.
I've got my awareness up and down, both.
Okay.
And then I say, I greet you. And then, now, let your awareness open up to include you. Does that make sense?
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Okay, you know, when we started, when we had this exercise the first time, after a while I received another email that we may be in a situation we don't have to really look up or look down, but or say it out very loud, but we have to make sure to say it out loud, or say it out. Now, that brings to mind that one has to be standing still. It's not something you have to be saying and walking away from your car or from the house.
You're standing still, correct.
Okay. Then, I want to understand if that still holds or we... they have to, you know, look up, or because sometimes it depends on the circumstance, you know, surrounding you. You start looking up, raising your arms, and all that. People will be looking at you like you're weird or something.
Well, you are weird. But that does not mean, Magnus, that you're wrong.
Okay.
If you were, Magnus, have you ever walked into a Catholic church?
Yeah.
Do you think it's ridiculous that people are showering themselves with water and putting their knees on the floor?
No, as a matter of fact, sorry to cut you off, and maybe it has a relationship with this teaching. In my church, you know, after prayers, you raise your hand upwards and shout hallelujah.
Yeah.
You know, and... hallelujah, yea, hosanna. It's a must after every prayer.
Right, right.
Sometimes to express their joy, you know, you see somebody not in a long time, a member.
Right.
Put your hand and say hallelujah, you know, something like that.
Right, that's sending a joyous note to Creator's ear.
Yes.
So that's, I mean, that's pretty weird too, isn't it?
It is. I asked this question. Some members will look at us crazy, but we don't care.
Right, exactly. I don't want you to embarrass yourself. I want you to go at the pace that's okay for you. However, keep in mind that what you're doing is demonstrating truth, very powerful truth on this planet. And a lot of people have noticed they go out in the morning. Now, we're not doing this yet, but when we start doing day greetings and day endings, and at first people are very tenuous, they want to go outside and they don't want to do it loud or they don't want to be very visible. However, as they get a little braver, they go out and they just do it, and then they notice all their neighbors are coming out about that time and looking up at the sky and down at the earth too. So you're changing the consciousness of yourself and the world around you, you know, but I'm not saying you have to be overt. Do you understand? Do it how it suits you. And let yourself grow in that. Don't force it, okay?
Alan, I had an observation about the eclipse ritual.
Sure.
I've been doing it, I guess, for 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
And I did observe, like, the wind or the rustling of leaves, and I did feel, like, refreshed.
Yeah.
The wind. But my concern was the last 2 days I've been doing it, like, nothing happened. So it kind of like a weird observation.
Well, that's okay. When you say nothing happened, can you show me a nothing?
No.
Okay.
Well, I guess it changed.
It changes. It changes all the time.
Okay.
You know, and realize that any intentional act always has a result. But your perceptic or your awareness or your ability to perceive is not getting yet seeing it, okay?
Okay.
So don't worry about that, because it's going to surprise you. Because sometimes you will see an obvious environmental result, and sometimes you won't. And sometimes you will be shocked to realize that a week later or throughout the week, that various, so to speak, serendipitous or coincidental, whatever you want to call it, conditions came into your life that you now realize were the result of that ritual. Do you see?
Okay.
And that's what we're doing. We're building a vocabulary of rituals like this and how they affect us and the environment.
I have a question, please. Very brief.
Go ahead.
Does it have I don't know, with this exit ritual, I grew up with elders, and they have similar things. So I always end up saying it in the native tongue they say, because I was privileged to grow up in a society where you speak English and speak the native tongue.
Right.
So I always say it in the native tongue.
That's okay.
You know, does it make a difference?
No.
Okay.
If you want to say it in your native tongue, that's fine. But keep the terms exactly the way we do, okay?
Exactly.
Because I don't want you all to do it different in this respect. Later on, we will do Sky Father and Earth Mother. I'm starting off generic because I don't want to offend anyone's beliefs.
So we should be following the
printout
from the CD versus the video.
Because
the video, she does make reference to the...
Oh, yeah. No, do it the way we tell you each class.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because she did mention, too, I watched that before the class, the video, and she did mention, she added a power statement before her greeting.
Yeah, and we will do that later on, okay? But right now, we're just doing this form to get to know it, okay? And I don't want you changing the words for another reason, too, because these rituals are designed to connect us with very specific beings, and you change the wording and you may get someone else. So...
Tell us what beings, like for this one?
That I want you to discover.
Okay.
So we don't say Mother Earth, for instance. We say Earth Mother. Okay, and there's a reason for that. But I don't want to go into that too much right now. But it does bring up something fairly important that I need to tell you all, is that my responsibility to you and the school's responsibility to you is that if you will do the exercises that we give you as they are given to you, that you will never hurt yourself or others. You will never be at risk more than just at a calculated risk that is acceptable. You will never be life-threatened, nor will you threaten anyone else's life. And the way we know that is so is because I've taught these courses a lot, and no one has ever been at risk, and no one has ever gotten hurt. But if you alter the procedure, I can't guarantee that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you're going to learn lots, believe me. You don't need to alter any of this to get more than you can even ever imagine under your belt. You will. So the Class 1 exercises start on page 21. And they tell you how to do explorations 1, 2, and 3. And it's really easy because exploration 1 and 2 we've already done. We did hair in class, and we talked about people's behavior. That's 1 and 2. Well, actually, it's 2 and 1. So you practice these recognitions, i.e. looking at objects and people around you in the environment and identifying all the air characteristics that you can. And so keeping a little bit of a note on how it manifested there. I mean, yes, they had shade malleable, but where? Oh, their clothes were wrinkled. Fine. Their skin was wrinkled. Fine. Or they were all over the map. Fine. And then do the same thing in body parts. Your body parts or somebody else's body parts. Even the non-seeable ones. Now, we always do our homework in present time. What does that mean? It is better to look at something in present time and do it rather than remembering something you saw yesterday and trying to figure out what the elements were. Because at this point, your memory is not that reliable. It's better to look at the person sitting across from you and do them or the object out there than thinking, oh yeah, yesterday I saw Steve and he was shape malleable and so on and so on. It's much better to do your homework in present time. But do it while you're doing other things. Do it while you're eating your lunch in a restaurant, while you're driving your car, watching the madness of the fellow travelers around you, whatever. Is the situation shaped malleable? Heck yeah. Is it inherently stable? We hope so. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes cars are going up and down all over the place. Now the third one takes a little bit of an explanation. That would be, let's see, page exploration 3 is on page 33. If you all would turn there, or maybe it doesn't start there.
Yeah, it's on 33.
Is it 33?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let me tell you how to do this, because otherwise you'll get lost. And do it with every characteristic of air, at least one, because you will. There's nothing that will show you more than this. Okay, so first you pick a characteristic. You got a list, just look down the list and pick a characteristic. I don't care which one you start with. Say you pick expandable. Air is expandable, okay. The next thing you do to do this exercise is you must find an example of expandable air. Okay, so one example of expandable air is blowing up a balloon. Is that so?
Yep.
Okay. Now, you identify what could be constructive and what could be destructive in that example of that characteristic. So constructive is you have a nice balloon to play with, or maybe you have a balloon to ride under in a basket, i.e. a hot air balloon. Destructive is if you blow it up too much and the thing explodes and you're riding under it, you'll fall. Or destructive if it's just a toy balloon or a play balloon or, you know, one you're blowing up and the thing explodes in your face, it may hurt you. Or it may scare your dog who then bites your cat that then climbs up the drapes and tears the drapes down. It's just that simple. Don't make it complicated. But don't try to do a characteristic constructive and destructive, because you'll be all over the map, i.e., oh, air is reactive. So constructive of that is, that's not the way you do it. Air is reactive. What is an example of that? The wind blowing through the prairie. Constructive is it carries seeds to replant the prairie. Destructive is it blows away the topsoil and nothing grows. You all got it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Real easy when you do it right. Real difficult when you do it wrong. So, any questions at all?
Are you saying to just attach simply a physical situation like in your examples to each of these characteristics?
Yeah, you first you start with a characteristic and then you find an example. Because they you're doing the example as constructive or destructive. Do you see?
Yeah.
The same example.
Mm-hmm.
Ways it can be constructive, ways it could be destructive. That's how you do it.
Gotcha.
So, Alan, is it either or you're giving the example of
both
constructive and how it can be destructive?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right, because, see, it teaches you to locate that characteristic in many different ways. Do you understand?
Yes.
It's stretching your perceptive ability. But just the thinking about it, you know, is what is stretching you. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
It's like a meditation. So instead of worrying about why so-and-so is late, do that. And jot some notes down. And bring them to class. And that's how we do it. And you've got good examples there. So you know, just follow what the examples show you. You've got charts to fill out. I mean, we've made it as easy as we can imagine. And when I did these courses, there was no book. There was no notes. There was no charts. We had to learn how to write really fast. George did not talk that slow. So we've really modernized this a lot, updated it, whatever you want to call it, to make it easy, because you don't have to take that many notes in class. You just take notes on what you know, what stands out for you. But you've got so much material there to look at. So, but basically, that's our first class. Questions or comments? Kimberly.
I had a question about the, on the website.
Okay.
That accessing website. When it, the link for basic magic, are we supposed to be able to get in there? Or
yeah.
Is that where the chat area is and everything?
Yeah.
Okay, because I can't get in.
You can't get in?
No, I can get into the first link to the apprenticeship program, but nothing else.
That's probably correct, I think. You'd have to ask Stephanie that.
Okay.
Okay, good. Kimberly, she can't get into the basic magic link, but the apprenticeship link, is that correct?
Correct.
The basic magic is the other class.
Right.
Right. Yeah, because we're running two basic magic classes right now, Kimberly.
Yeah.
So yours is called apprenticeship.
Okay.
Right. And the chat is on there too, right? Their chat is on apprenticeship?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that answer that?
I think so. Yes, it does.
Okay. Helen, any questions or comments?
I was just curious. Do we cover the same material as the basic magic, or?
This is basic magic.
Right, but you know, when you say you're doing two basic magic classes, are they?
Oh, they're just finishing.
Okay. Now I just wondered if do they do more magic than we'll be doing, or?
Oh heck, no! You'll be doing far more than they ever did.
Oh, okay.
You guys are elves of magic.
Okay.
Randy, questions or comments?
No, Alan, don't have any right now.
Are you happy?
Yeah.
Good. Tom?
Yes. It was just a very good first class.
Thank you.
And I really found that as you explain things, you know, just reading the material, there's a lot of information that comes out, but then just having you explain it, it just kind of opened it up to me today. So I just wanted to...
Well, that's incredible. That means that this process works. That's really cool. You know, I mean, I love knowing that. So does Stephanie. So thanks for that comment.
Sure.
Sharon.
I enjoyed the class also.
Yeah, and you're on the second time round.
Yes, but I did. It was very, very enjoyable.
Isn't it different the second time?
Yes, it is. I think I have a little better perspective on it.
Isn't that fun?
Yes.
Dan, it's your second time round in a sense, too.
Yeah, it's a little more comfortable this time. I don't feel like I have to be moving at such a high speed of trying to comprehend stuff.
Well, you did great the first time, so think of what you're going to do this time.
I'm excited about it.
Good. Me too. Magnus, questions or comments?
I'm not waiting right now. The comment is I enjoyed the class.
Good.
The first time trying teleconference, I never knew it's this good. You can't see that the people, but it's like you're in a classroom.
Yeah, it is, and we enjoyed you too a lot, Magnus.
Thank you.
You're quite. You add a lot of dimension to this class, as everybody does. Micheline, any questions or comments?
No, I really enjoyed the class this evening. It was really good.
Good.
I'll be very honest. It was extremely challenging for me to be here tonight. I don't know why, but I'm really, really, really glad that I made it.
I think that's covered in the introduction under the inconvenience factor.
Oh.
Now you know. What
I did read that.
Now you know what we're talking about, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. But you always get a big benefit when you win.
Oh, yes, you're so right.
Yeah, so just remember that. You know, this is magic. It is not always convenient. Yeah. Jennifer, questions or comments?
Well, with my exercises, am I going to understand air?
Yes.
It'll come clear?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and if you have any problem, come to lab or call me, okay?
All right.
Alrighty. Well, thank you all.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
And good night to you all.
Night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Bye.